Don't get boxed in by a whiteboarding app with limited functionality. Try Lucid, the visual collaboration platform that covers your team's entire spectrum of work. With Lucid, you can host virtual brainstorms and so much more. Diagram important processes, conduct cross-functional planning on an infinite visual canvas, power your workflows with data and intelligent automation, and bring your best ideas to life. Try Lucid for free at lucid.co/Spotify.
Let's talk.
Wow. Two bugs on bikes are middle-aged gap years cycling across Europe and Africa. Jackie Webster has always wanted to travel in Africa, but she just never expected it would be on a bike. She has written this tome about what kind of happened next. I'd like to say that joining me, not from somewhere pedaling madly even, is Jackie Webster herself. Jackie, good morning to you.
Good morning. In fact, evening here. I'm coming from Sydney, so yeah, 7:30 in the evening in Sydney.
Great. Well, thank you for joining. Well, that's an awful long way to go by bike. Jackie, what are you doing over there?
No, I live in Sydney. I grew up on a farm in Yorkshire, but moved to Sydney about 18 years ago now. So, yeah, and we took a gap year from our jobs in Sydney and set off cycling in March 2023.
Right.
Yeah, so we actually set off, we started in Morocco and did a bit of a loop in Morocco and then went up into Spain.
So let's just go back a bit here, okay? Because middle-aged gap here, you know, and hey, we are the same generation. What were you doing up until that point that you could take a gap year per se?
Well, I was, I'm a professor of public health,
right,
working for a health and medical research institute. My partner works in IT for one of the big media companies here in Australia. But we both had been in our jobs for a long time, and my partner's got two boys who'd grown up and left home. So we decided it was time to take a year off, and we kind of decided that we were going to do it regardless of what happened, but both approached our jobs with a view to saying we want to take a year off, but we'd love to come back to work. And both of our organisations agreed that this is a good thing to do. So, we're in a really lucky position where we could come back a year later to our jobs.
And the next question, were you a cycling person before, or was just on the spur of the moment?
No, we were both cyclists before. Actually, we met through triathlon. So we were both training for long-distance triathlons when we met. So we kind of changed from the full-on triathlon and loads of training to what for us was kind of more leisurely bike touring. But that said, it was still pretty tough out there some days.
I was going to say, yeah, leisurely bike touring, cycling across most of Europe. I mean, why? Because if you're based in Australia, what was the appeal of Europe rather than sort of going from Sydney, great distance through that, or going across Asia, or what was the Europe, or across the States? What was the why Europe per se?
Well, I mentioned I grew up on a farm in Yorkshire at Selby, and so the original plan was to cycle from Selby to Singapore, so all the way back to Australia.
Yeah.
So go back to my roots and then cycle back to where we are now. But we actually set off in March, and it was pretty cold at that time of the year in the UK, and that's why we started in Morocco. And then we cycled across Europe and got as far as Turkey. I'll backtrack for that later. But then we sort of got a bit stuck and couldn't keep going east, and so had a bit of a change of plan, and that's when we went to Africa.
So Selby to Singapore, which I never thought I'd say. I'm sitting in a studio at the southern bit of Spain, and if I stood on my desk, A, you'd see my rather attractive ankles, but B, I can see Gibraltar and Morocco from here. So why Morocco did you start from, and where did you do Tangier, Marrakesh, Casablanca? Where did you start in Morocco from?
We started in Marrakesh, and then we did a loop around. We went straight, our first day, we went straight up into the Atlas Mountains and climbed a crazy number of kilometres. And if you read the book, you'll find, like, on day one, I'm like, what the hell am I doing? This is absolutely impossible. And, it was really tough, but really spectacular. If anybody's thinking of cycling in Morocco, just do it. It's really, really stunning.
Yeah, but Atlas Mountains go on forever. I've done Atlas Mountains to Sahara. Borough. It's steep as what's it. It's beautiful. I went with a photographer. We had to stop every 5 minutes to take pictures. I'm like, Kev, can we go? But also, should we say there are some interesting driving traditions and interesting road conditions? So there's not. I didn't remember seeing an awful lot of cyclists in Morocco. So how do people look at you when you were... And how much were you carrying on your bike? 2 points. And how much were you carrying on your bikes as well? Presumably you had everything with you.
Yeah, we had absolutely everything with us. So we had stuff for camping, we had cooking gear, we had a couple of change of outfits and basically all the wet weather gear and coats. So I think my partner was carrying about 50 kilos and I was carrying about 30 kilos. So, yeah, and it makes a big difference. When we set off, we were used to riding road bikes, and I think we hadn't anticipated quite how hard it was going to be with all of the luggage. So, but in terms of the traffic and the roads in Morocco, we found it. We were surprised by how easy it was to navigate and how good the drivers were. Obviously, getting out of Marrakesh is a bit of a baptism by fire. Probably not the sanest city to start in. And, you know, it's like wheeling our bikes behind the orange carts through the souks and trying to sort of dodge all the guys with trailers of food and things was quite an eye-opener. But once we got onto the road, there was a cycleway at the side of the road, and we were soon up into the mountains. And we found the cars, on the whole, were pretty respectful and kept their distance. But people were super interested, and we felt like celebrities riding through Morocco, and all the schools that you went past, everybody's shouting and saying hello, and everybody wants to talk to you.
Yeah, and you hang out with some of my favourite people in the world, who are the Berber, who are just brilliant, aren't they?
Absolutely amazing. We didn't know much about the Berber people before we went, and their hospitality was like nothing else. Beautiful, gentle, peaceful people, and always wanting to invite you in for a cup of tea and something to eat and share their stories with you.
So whereabouts in Morocco was that? Was that what was that, or whereabouts were you in Morocco when you...
So that was in Idjoukak,
right.
And some of the surrounding villages on the side of the Atlas Mountains. And the people were just beautiful. Sadly, those were some of the towns that also got devastated by the earthquake, which was actually later that year.
Yeah.
So we were very, very sad to read about that, and really hope that the people of Morocco have recovered from that.
So you then sort of turned north. And what, you come into Europe, so what, Tangier to Algeciras and then up? How did you do it?
Yeah, that's right, Tangier. And then from Motril, we took the ferry from Motril. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, from Tangier to Motril.
Motril.
My Spanish accent, Motril. And then rode another big hilly day from Motril up, straight up to Granada. I've got a very good friend in Granada, Steve Cook, who we went and visited him and had a lovely day hanging out with his family. And then we went from Granada and cycled all the way across, inland, across to Valencia.
That's the Sierra Nevada. You said a bit of a hilly day. That's the Pajaras. You guys are crazy.
Yeah, we skirted across the edge of the Sierra Nevada. The views are absolutely spectacular. Now, Spain was hard because I think we were still, you know, like we looked as we went along. And I think by that stage, we hadn't sort of realized that actually planning ahead is a bad idea.
Right.
We booked the ferry. We decided we should book the ferry to Mallorca. We were going to go over to Mallorca, and we booked the ferry and then didn't quite give ourselves enough time. And so we were trying to ride really long days with lots of hills day after day after day in order to get to the ferry. And in hindsight, we should have just cancelled the ferry and on another day, because it did make it quite hard. But the scenery is just spectacular around there. I remember one day, though, in cycling past, we were on our way to Cazorla, which is this beautiful hilltop town. But we must have cycled through 30 kilometres where you saw just the olive trees. Nothing else, like whichever direction you looked in, it was just olive trees forever. And then we remember getting to the town and not being able to, we're starving, we must be able to find olives. We couldn't find any olives to eat. But we stayed in some beautiful places in Spain. We stayed in some cave houses, we stayed in lovely Airbnbs, and we also did some camping, both a little bit of wild camping, but also in the national parks, in the campsites.
So you've, I mean, like I said, you were very keen triathlete. So presumably you know what you're going to eat, and you've got the planning relatively good. I mean, apart from saying, oh, you know, booking that ferry. So you planned it. Did you plan in rest days? It wasn't every day, because that would presumably make it a bit of a slog.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slog. We got better at having rest days as we went along. So this was a point of contention between my partner Joe and me all the way. So he just wants to keep going, whereas I want to stop and smell the roses, and yeah. I want to write and I want to reflect. So there was a healthy tension, I'd like to say, between him saying, no, let's just keep going, and me saying, but we've just cycled up to this top of the hill. Can we not just like stay here? Because you cycle up and it takes hours and hours, and you cycle down and it takes like 10 minutes and you go.
Yeah, but there's another hill. So, you know what, suppose like, there's another hill. So let's, because we've only got 18 minutes. So
we need to get to Africa.
Yeah, so, okay, so up through what? Go across the Pyrenees, which you go through southern France? How do you do that one? What's the route through there then?
No, we went along the coast of, so we went to Mallorca, and then we got the ferry to Toulon. So we cut out a lot of the coast of France and Spain, not least because Joe cycled there a lot before. And then we went through Italy, Slovenia, all the way through the Balkans, through Bulgaria. And that was absolutely fascinating. And for us, because I'm from Europe, and we've been back to Joe's half Italian. So we've spent a lot of time back in Europe, but we'd never been to the Balkan countries. And relearning the history of the Balkans and the conflict and that was just great. Really, really good to understand. And also, I mean, Slovenia is absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
That was probably one of our favorite places. And then so we went through Bulgaria, and then we got to Turkey. But by the time we got to Turkey, it was way too hot. It was really touristy season. And when I say too hot, like the tar on the roads was literally melting and sticking to the tires.
Yeah, that would do it. That's my definition of too hot, yeah.
Yeah, and we were sort of a bit over it by then. Partly, we didn't really know where we were going from that point onwards, because we couldn't get, like, we got to Istanbul, we went to the Chinese embassy. It was going to be hard to try and get visas for China, because we were going to keep going east. But we got told, but they wouldn't give us visas for China without going back to Australia. We couldn't get to Azerbaijan because the land borders were still closed after COVID. And it was just all getting too hard, and we were going to have to fly a couple of times. So that was when we kind of hit rock bottom. I kind of wanted to give up. And then we had a rethink, and we revisited and looked at the map, and we decided to fly to Africa. And as you said at the outset, I've always wanted to go to Africa, just never imagined it would be on a bike. But it was the best decision we made. So we flew from Bodrum to Kigali in Rwanda.
Yeah.
Rwanda, I know people, Rwanda is actually one of the safest countries in the world, and it's beautiful green, but it's very, very hilly. That's why it's called the land of 1,000 hills.
Perfect cycling country. I mean, that's what you want to look for, isn't it? I mean, couldn't you just go round and round hot? Couldn't you say, look, let's look for the flattest bit of Africa we can find? But no, the land of 1,000 hills.
But the flattest bit of Africa is when you get to the other end, when you get to Namibia. Well, it's not even that flat, but going through the desert in Namibia was like the opposite of Rwanda. So we went from rolling green hills in Rwanda to the deserts and headwinds of Namibia. But for us, Rwanda, Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania is really the heart of Africa.
Yeah.
And we just found those countries sort of mind-blowingly. Yeah, we just loved.
Were you expecting the lushness and the, you know, everything's through a green filter, and it is really quite something. That central part of, you know, as you said, Rwanda and those central sort of African nations.
No, I think I had the stereotypical idea of Africa as, you know, of spread dusty plains with acacia trees and very little growing.
A wildebeest or something going past, you know.
That's right. And it was, and so Rwanda was really completely different. Sort of, it's all terraced hills and tea plantations, and it's really stunning.
And you said, you know, you're going through Morocco and people were running out past the schools when you went by in Morocco. I mean, in Africa, they must have lost their marbles when you went past on cycles.
They did, and it was actually, and it was beautiful. And we, I guess, one of our regrets is that, well, yes or no, is that we didn't take like a camera or something, because they were just some moments that will, you know, it was hard to capture in any other ways. The kids just used to come running up to the fence and shout hello and Mzungu. In fact, they, Mzungu, Mzungu, and Mzungu means white person. It actually originally means traveller, but it's now become synonymous with white person. And it's actually said in a very, they're very happy to see you there. There's lots of reasons why people in Africa maybe wouldn't be happy to see white people, but the kids are.
You're two mad Aussies on bikes. What else are you going to do? So you take that sort of sweep, like you go through Namibia, interesting place, very interesting. Yeah, yeah. And then what, you're heading to, what's the final destination then you're trying to get
no,
to?
No, so Namibia was near the end. So we started in the middle in Rwanda. We went up through, so we went up north, and then through Uganda, and then across to Kenya, and then down to Tanzania.
Blimey.
And then, Malawi, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia. I feel like I missed a country. And then South Africa. So Namibia was right to the end. And actually it changes. We found when we crossed the Zambezi River, it felt like sort of it changed and you get more of the what was formerly sort of white South Africa.
Yeah. Well, Namibia, 100%.
Or previously reduced. It's a little bit different then. But still, it was all spectacular. I mean, some of it very hard. And, you know, not like I don't want to paint the picture of it being an amazing experience all the time. Some days were just really, really, really tough. And, and hard work and dusty and tiring. And I remember getting pretty upset one day after going to three shops and not being able to find any cycling shorts to replace the ones that were torn. And I was just like, I'm so daggy. The highs were worth it.
Did you bump into other cyclists and they sort of say, and they, you say, well, where have you come from? And you would go sort of, well, we started in the Sydney and then we were in the Atlas Mountains and then we got as far as Istanbul. And by the way, I mean, they must have gone, what?
No, we did. But you know, we're not the only crazy people. There's a surprising amount of people cycling from Cairo to Cape Town even.
Yeah.
And there's a WhatsApp group. And I think I calculated there's about 30 people, or 30 people or couples who were actually cycling in Africa at the same time as us. But actually to meet them on the road is another thing altogether, because usually most people cycle in the same direction. Most people go from north to south, and you set off a couple of days apart. So I think we only saw three other cyclists in Africa, apart from obviously the Rwandans or the Malawians who are on bikes all the time, which is another beautiful thing about traveling in Africa, that in a lot of countries, that's how most people travel. So it's a really good way of getting closer to the people. And you had some really fun races with all the locals.
I suppose the other thing is, if you want to test how strong your relationship is, then go cycling with your loved one for a year, because presumably you said the thing already about, you know, he was already wanting to get onto the next hill and not slow down. I mean, there must have been times when you thought, you know, this gap year could be a time that we reflect on all our situations, honey.
No, that's absolutely right. But there weren't too many moments like that. I think earlier on it was harder, but then we managed to sort of adjust and get better at knowing each other's limitations and not to push each other too much. So, yeah, most of the moments were early on. I think by the end of the journey, we were much more in tune and we felt like we returned, much, much closer for traveling together. But I think if things weren't working out, it would be a good way to
just push him off the bike and keep going.
Push things over the edge.
Was did you finish at Cape Town, Joburg? Where did you finish?
We finished well in Cape Town, and then we cycled further to the Cape of Good Hope, which is And actually, there's if anybody wants to have a look at my Instagram, Jackie Webster Author on Instagram, there's a fantastic video of us being escorted for the final kilometre of our ride by ostriches. So we were just cycling along and actually I was a little bit behind Joe, and one female ostrich sort of trotted down between me and him, and then and then three more joined, and they just followed him, and I was behind sort of filming, and I was quite a long way behind, so I was actually quite scared that they
yeah, they're not small. I mean, ostriches, you might, you know, head in the sand, but when you actually get next to them, they're the biggest, they're the biggest, scariest things you've ever seen, aren't they?
Yeah, so they just trotted all the way along for the last kilometre, which was absolutely spectacular and kind of made us feel like it was a grand finale. But then it's bizarre because you have to queue up at this sign and there's all of these other people in the queue and they've just driven like 2 kilometres to get to the sign and they want to have their photo. Oh. And you want to say, hang on, guys, I've just cycled 18,000 kilometres to get here. But you have to wait your turn.
So what's it like when you've finally finished and you've presumably, you know, loaded the bikes on and you land back in Oz? Is there, did you think, okay, sort of now what next? I mean, you know, now I'm going to get, yeah.
Every day. And it's, it was pretty challenging sort of getting back here and going back to work. But for me, that was why actually the decision to write a book was fantastic, because that was just like a continuation of our adventure then. So when we were traveling, I wasn't planning on writing a book. I just sort of kept a journal mainly because otherwise I forget everywhere I've been.
Right.
So that was partly, yeah, keeping a journal so I could remember things. And then when I came back, I approached a book coach, but more with the idea of saying, can I turn my journals, how do I print them out with some photos to make a nice sort of photo book type thing? And she persuaded me to write a travel memoir. So I'd never, I'm an academic, I write papers all the time, but they're sort of scientific research papers. And so I had to learn how to structure a memoir, which Jess Maddock from Henbury Books, she coached me to do that. And it was a fabulous thing because it just meant that every day we were reliving. And Joe, I wrote the book, but Joe was a big part of it. And every day at breakfast, I'd get up early and write. And then by breakfast time, I'd have 100 questions for him. And we just relive the experiences and go through each day, which was just great and really helps consolidate the experience. And for me, it certainly made it feel a little bit more meaningful and, yeah, helped to structure the meaning.
Why 2 bugs on a bike?
Oh, you're going to have to read it for
okay,
that,
all right, then, well, listen. Okay, well, okay, and by the way, listeners, if you can order the book, if you go to the virtual bookstore, you can order it today because you'll see a picture of 2 bugs on a bike there. If anybody's out there, Jackie, thinking of, yes, you know, who's of our age, thinking, yeah, well, you know, the kids are gone, you know, I can get a year off work, would you recommend anybody out there to go off and, I mean, not cycle madly around the world like you guys did, but just to go off and have that year off and do something different?
Absolutely. I think it's a really, really good thing to do. Obviously, not everybody's in that position, but if you are in the position, I think it's just worth it. It really is worth it. And there's something about like going for a year that's very, very different to going for, you know, a holiday or even sort of 2 months, because I think it gives you an opportunity to kind of completely change your mindset. And certainly we came back, it wasn't like we'd just been on holiday, we came back sort of determined to sort of live our life differently and really to focus on, I guess, you know, how are we going to build that into our life so we can go and do it again? How do we set up our lives in that way? And we're both super, super keen to go and spend time living and working in Africa now. So for us, that's the goal in the next couple of years, to spend some time living and working in Africa.
What are you hoping that people are going to take, apart from having a great read and the fact that you're both completely mad, but what do you think that people are going to take and learn from the book?
I think, well, what I hope, and it's obviously very different for everybody, but I think I hope it's an enjoyable read and people can feel like they're part of the adventure, but that they're also inspired to do something different. And, you know, I always say, like, even if you're like going out for a walk and go to the local shop, sometimes it's kind of good to go, oh, I've never been up this street before. Let's give it a try. And so I think it's approaching life like that, to say, like, just try and get out of your routine, try and think, can I do something a little bit differently today, something I haven't done before, and see where it takes me.
Absolutely brilliant. You mentioned there's an Instagram page. So where can people find you online? Where's the best place to check you out?
So Instagram is JackieWebster.author. You can find me there, and that's all our travel and adventure. Or if anybody's interested more in the work side of things, I'm a public health professor working on food policy, then that's my LinkedIn account, and that's Jackie Webster Camperdown.
And you can also order the book, as I said before, via our own virtual bookstore. Go and get the book just to find out what the title means. Two Bugs on a Bike. Absolutely brilliant story. It's by Jackie Webster. Jackie, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Charles. It was great talking to you.